Riding hard, Andy began hoping he and Daggett would reach the McIntosh's ranch headquarters before the Teals. Sporadic gunfire told him they had not.
Damn knotheads have already opened the ball!
Maybe nobody's dead yet.
He saw the Teals were spread out afoot, taking refuge behind a wagon, behind a shed, beneath the windmill tower. Lacking clear targets, they fired at the main family house and the bunkhouse. Occasional answering shots came from the shattered windows. The invasion took the McIntoshes by surprise, without time to pull together in one defensive position. Daggett didn't hesitate. He held his horse to a hard trot and rode into the line of fire, waving his hat.
Put those guns down and stop this goddamn foolishness right now!
Surprised by the older ranger's audacity, Andy swallowed hard and followed him, his spine tingling in anticipation of a bullet. Harper Teal rose up from behind a wagon and lifted his rifle.
Get out of the way, Daggett! You want to get shot?
Harper Teal, you lay that rifle down!
Daggett turned toward the main house.
Ethan McIntosh! You get yourself out onto the porch! I want to talk to you right now!
Daggett turned a fierce gaze back at the scattered Teal forces.
Anybody fires a shot, I'll kill him!
The combatants were so taken aback by Daggett's forceful presence that no one raised a protest. Most lowered their weapons, though they didn't lay them down. The front door opened slowly. Ethan McIntosh poked his gray head out and paused, as if expecting to be shot.
Come on out! There ain't nobody gonna hurt you unless it's me! You hear that, Harper Teal? The same thing goes for you!
Teal didn't reply, but he stepped from behind the wagon, holding his rifle at arm's length.
Lay your weapon on the ground, Harper.
First, I want to see that Ethan's not healed.
McIntosh, now farther out on the porch, raised both hands to his shoulders.
I've no weapon on me. But lest you take that as an opportunity for treachery, Harper Teal, there are more inside. They can cut out what little heart you have.
Teal put down his rifle and stepped into the open.
You rangers have got no business here. This is a private matter.
It stopped being private when the first shot was fired. It's you who've got no business being here, Harper. You're trespassing on McIntosh land.
Ask Ethan about the trespassing he did when him and his bunch raided our place after midnight.
McIntosh looked surprised.
Us? Not a soul left this place save for my son, Jake. He sneaked off to town.
Lanny Teal tore out from his refuge behind the windmill.
Damn you, Jake! I told you to stay away from Lucy!
Jake burst out onto the porch.
You go to hell, Lanny. I'll see whoever I want to, whenever I want to.
Boy, get back in the house. There are matters of far greater importance here than your shallow infatuation. Take up your station in case they begin shooting again.
Jake obeyed resentfully.
Someday, Lanny. You can count on that.
How about now?
Harper Teal glared at Lanny.
Boy, I don't know what I'll ever do with you. We come here to set things right, and all you got on your mind is that scatterbrained schoolgirl. I bet she's never scalded a hog or wrung a chicken's neck.
Red-faced, Lanny came up with no suitable reply. He looked at the ground.
Ethan McIntosh swears that whoever raided your place, it wasn't him or his outfit.
If you believe that, you're a bigger fool than I thought you was. He's been telling folks that me and my boys are behind a cattle stealing and other such around here. Anybody with a lick of sense knows he's a liar. That wily old scoundrel's been trying for years to get my scalp. He'd do better to worry about his own.
The fight between you two is so old, I bet you don't even remember what started it.
You'd lose that bet. It was over a nice piece of creek land. Him being a Yankee, the carpetbag government seen to it that he got it instead of me.
You got yourself a good ranch in spite of that.
With Ethan working against me all the way, he figures if he can run me off, he can grab what's mine. But I ain't going no place. I'll still be here when he leaves or when he's lowered into the ground. Either way would suit me fine.
McIntosh had gradually moved down from the porch.
You'll have to live to be 100 before you see either event come to pass.
Teal no longer talked to Daggett or Andy. He turned his anger directly on McIntosh.
You damn old land hog. You ain't got nothing I want, and you ain't getting anything I got. If you don't quit accusing us or sending night riders to shoot up our place, I'll put a couple more holes in you than the Lord intended.
Everybody has said enough. Harper! I want you to take your boys and go on home, now!
Teal seemed torn, but after trying to stare Daggett down, he turned back to McIntosh.
All right, we'll go, but this thing ain't over. Looks to me like you've chosen who to crawl into bed with, Daggett. So I'll thank you to never come back onto our place. As for Carrie, she's already had enough hurt in her life. I don't want you to ever speak to her again.
But it was Carrie who...
A dark look from Daggett stopped Andy from saying more.
You tell your McIntosh friends that the next time they come shooting, they better bring along a minister. They'll need him to preach the funerals.
Harper made a sweeping motion with his arm.
Come on, boys. There'll be another day.
The Teals mounted up. All three of McIntosh's sons came out onto the porch, guns in their hands. The old man stood in the yard where he and Teal had faced each other.
Is that all you Rangers are gonna do? Look what they've done to my house! Look at the bullet holes!
Daggett was trying hard to keep his emotions under control. He gave the old man a look of disgust, but choked down whatever he was aching to say.
Be glad there's no bullet holes in any of you. Or are there?
Not a scratch. It'll be a cold day in July before the Teals ever get the upper hand over us. We'll wipe out the whole bunch someday.
You ought not to talk like that. People might get to thinking you mean it.
Hell, I do mean it!
Andy had come to regard Ike as the most sensible of the McIntoshes. He turned to him.
Maybe you can talk to your father.
Ike was still on edge.
They had no call to come down on us like they done, hollering and shooting.
Well, somebody raided them. They thought it was you.
It wasn't, and that's the truth. We were all here last night except Jake, and Papa told you where he was.
Then maybe you better give some thought to who it was and the reason they did it.
It wasn't anybody but that old boar hog and his litter. He was lying through his teeth.
They all heard that rifle somewhere out in the brush in the direction the Teals had taken. Ethan doubled over, clutching his side. Ike rushed to him.
Papa!
The younger McIntosh eased his father to the ground. Ike turned an anguished gaze toward Andy and Daggett.
He's been hit!
Damn! I didn't think Harper would do it.
Daggett dropped onto his knees beside the old man as two women came rushing from the house. He looked up at Andy.
Let's get him inside before they fire again. Let's get everybody inside!
Quickly, they carried Ethan into the house and placed him on his high back bed. The bullet's impact had knocked the breath from him. McIntosh's wife, Agatha, tore his shirt open and unbuttoned the front of his long underwear. The bullet had cut a gash across the ribs. It was bleeding.
You think it went into his lung?
Such a wound was often fatal, if not immediately, then more slowly through pneumonia. Agatha examined the damage.
I don't think so. It appears to me that he might have a broken rib or two, but nothing he's apt to die of.
At the moment, she was the calmest of the McIntoshes.
The Indians couldn't kill him. Rebel bullets couldn't do it. And he's not about to leave us now, because I won't stand for it.
She pointed to the door.
Patience and me will get him ready. Ike, don't you and the boys just stand there. Go hitch up the wagon so we can take him to the doctor.
His face grim, Daggett motioned to Andy.
Let's catch up to the Teals. We'll see if they can explain that shot.
Stepping out onto the porch, Andy stared in surprise.
We don't have to catch up. Bud and Lanny are coming back.
The two Teal brothers stopped their horses a little short of the porch. They were clearly agitated.
I thought you Rangers were going to see that nobody shot at us.
Nobody did, not here.
Somebody fired a shot. Lucky it didn't hit any of us.
It hit Ethan.
Bud's jaw dropped.
Ethan? I swear, Ranger, it was none of our bunch done it. We figured one of the McIntoshes fired at us.
Daggett's fists were clenched.
Hey, you wouldn't lie to me, would you?
Lines against our religion. I'll swear on the Bible in front of all the McIntoshes.
Maybe another time and place. Right now, the McIntoshes wouldn't believe you if you swore on a whole stack of Bibles. You'd best be going before they decide to take up their guns again.
How bad is the old man hurt?
He'll live, but this ain't gonna improve his disposition any.
The Rangers watched them leave.
I wish I could believe them, but who the hell else will take a shot at Ethan?
Sheriff Seymour rode up.
Is the trouble over with?
For today, it looks like.
Anybody hurt?
Ethan took a bullet across his ribs. They're fixing to haul him to town. Naturally, he blames the Teals. He's talking crazy.
Yeah, nothing new there. Him and Harper both talk crazy when it's about each other. Sometimes I'm tempted to go off on a long hunting trip and let nature take its course. Things might get quiet around here afterward.
The graveyard is quiet too, but who wants a big graveyard?
He considered the shot that came from the brush.
Did you see anybody besides the Teals as you rode in?
Nary a soul.
Andy reluctantly thought of Editor Tolliver and the suspicion he aroused about the sheriff.
Seymour could have fired that shot before he showed himself.
No, he couldn't.
Andy tried to push the thought from his mind, but it wouldn't leave him.
There was a time when I wouldn't take a cussing like the one I got from Harper Teal. I must be getting old.
He was mad. Maybe when he cools down, he'll see things different.
Old men can be awful stubborn. I know, because I'm getting there myself.
Just getting there?
Daggett's eyes widened as a new idea struck him.
I wonder where Rodok was. Him and that rifle.
Andy Daggett and Seymour accompanied Jake and Ike as they and the two women carried Ethan to town in a wagon. The doctor gave the old man a preliminary examination.
You probably don't deserve it, Ethan, but you could live to be 100. After I treat your wound, it'd be a good idea for you to stay around town a few days. We'll want to be sure you'll not develop blood poisoning.
Stay in town? Hell no! We have no intention of throwing away good money on a hotel room. The boys and the women folks are taking me right back home where I belong.
It's obvious that the bullet did no damage to your lungs. I'm giving you my best advice.
And at no bargain price, I'll wager. What this town needs is another doctor. A good one.
It will also need patience with judgment enough to listen to him.
Ethan hasn't listened to anybody but me in all these years, and he hasn't always done that. Many's the time I've considered divorce, but there's my family to think of. So I just let him rant and pay no attention to him. We'll stay in town like you said, Doctor.
Pay for a hotel room? I swear I'll get another doctor in this town if I have to...
From his front porch, the doctor, Andy, and Daggett watched the McIntosh parade head off to the hotel.
I thought you Rangers came to bring peace. I believe I've seen more bullet wounds, bruises, and abrasions since you got here than before you arrived.
Sheriff's Deputy Willis put down a whittling stick and pushed to his feet from a bench outside the saloon as Andy and Daggett approached.
The sheriff asked me to keep an eye on Rodok.
He jerked his thumb toward the saloon door.
He's in there.
Has he been there long?
Not very. He just came out of the hotel a little while ago. He headed straight for here.
Can you say for sure that he was in the hotel all night?
Well, pretty certain. He was playing poker in the saloon early in the evening. I got tired of watching him clip a couple of farmers, so... I went home about 10, 11 o'clock. I figured he wasn't going anywhere.
Yeah, well, you might have figured wrong. He could have left right after you did.
Rodok was sitting alone at a table when Andy and Daggett walked in. He was playing solitaire and appeared only marginally interested in the cards. Daggett approached him.
Pull up a chair, set yourself down. Well, you can choose the game.
Where you been all day?
I indulged in a game of chance till the wee hours. I spent most of the day in bed.
Alone?
You don't think I'd sully an innocent woman's name by using her for an alibi, do you?
If she was with you, she couldn't be too damn innocent.
The fact is, there wasn't any woman. I was by myself. Is there a reason I need an alibi?
The Teal Ranch got raided last night. Considering your line of work, I thought you might have left some boot tracks out there.
One unfortunate result from my so-called line of work is that anytime something happens, people jump to the conclusion that I was involved. Why should I raid someone's ranch? What would be in it for me?
That's a question I'd like an answer to.
The solitaire game went against Rodok. He shuffled the cards.
My horse is in the wagon yard. He was there last night and has been there all day. You can ask that hay shaker Scanlan. He'll tell you.
Somebody could have lent you a horse.
Do you intend to arrest me?
If I get some proof.
In the meantime, I assume that you do not care to join me in a game?
Oh, I think we've been playing one right along.
Rodok gave him a cold smile and began laying out the cards again. Daggett motioned for Andy to follow him outside.
You're figuring he could have been part of that raid on the Teals?
Not for fun. I'm betting somebody paid him. Maybe old man McIntosh.
He swore that nobody except Jake was away from his ranch last night.
That could be the truth as far as it goes. But the first year I went to school, I learned that 2 and 2 add up to 4. Ethan vowed revenge right in front of us when we got his cows back. You heard him. He could have hired Rodok and some others to do the job for him. That way the only dirt on his hands would come from counting out the money.
Andy couldn't stop thinking about the sheriff.
Could be somebody else entirely.
It could, but right now my money's on Ethan.
If it was Rodok and Ethan paid him, how come he took a shot at Ethan?
Well, maybe he missed his target. He might have been shooting at me.
Does he hate you that much?
Only half as much as I hate him.
Daggett lapsed into a thoughtful silence. He brushed aside some wood shavings and sat on the bench the deputy had vacated. He stared off at nothing in particular.
Damn Rodock. I got half a mind to walk in there and shoot him.
You don't know it was him. You're only guessing.
Even if it wasn't, he's earned a good killing 20 times over. The old-time vigilantes have the right idea. Hang him quick and hang him high.
You're not talking like a lawman.
I'm talking like a lawman who's brought in more than my share of bad men, only to watch pettifogging lawyers and judges turn them loose again. Put enough lead in one of them, you're shed of them for good.
The Rangers don't do it that way.
No. Have you ever seen a Ranger tell a man to run, then shoot him and claim he tried to escape?
And he had, a few times. The incidents left him shaken, though he understood the frustrations that led to them.
Maybe we've moved past that kind of thing. Maybe we've come into a better time.
Not till they shut down the last jail for lack of business.
Towards sundown, Carrie Teal came up the street in a buckboard. She had a couple of carpet bags under the seat. Spotting Daggett and Andy on a bench in front of the general store, she reined the horses toward them. Daggett rose quickly, taking off his hat and walking out to meet her.
I thought you went home.
I did, but I couldn't stay.
How come?
Pa figured out that I sent you Rangers to the McIntosh place. He raised a terrible row. My brothers took up for me, and I saw there was about to be a fight. I had to get away.
What do you plan to do?
Take a room in the hotel until he calms down.
What if he doesn't?
Then I'll try to find work here in town.
I don't think he'd stand still for that. He's liable to come roaring in here to drag you home.
Then there will be a fight.
Daggett took hold of her hands.
Look, if you need any money...
I have a little. It wouldn't look right taking money from you. People would talk.
Let them talk.
Daggett turned to Andy.
I'll escort her over to the hotel and see that they give her a decent room.
People will talk, sure enough.
Well, it'll give them something to do with their idle time.
Editor Tolliver stepped out of the saloon and watched the buckboard moving away with Carrie and Daggett on the seat.
It appears to me that Daggett has chosen his side.
Rangers don't take sides.
Almost everybody takes sides. I thought by his reputation that Daggett was made of cast iron. But I see he has a soft spot in his armor. He will not sit well with the McIntosh faction.
Well, he's just trying to be a gentleman, that's all.
Daggett a gentleman? That challenges credulity.
Andy wasn't sure he understood what Tolliver had said, but he chose not to ask. Tolliver would probably tell him in considerably more length than Andy chose to hear.
What more can you tell me about the events at the Teals and McIntosh's places?
Andy had told him nothing, but he knew the sheriff had.
Nobody got killed.
Andy was used to filing terse reports that wasted no words. He saw no need to give Tolliver more. The man would probably fill out the story from imagination anyway. Reading Tolliver's newspaper, Andy noticed the man did not handicap his stories with facts.
It would appear that events are building towards a violent climax. I suspect I shall soon have much to write about.
Is that what you're hoping for? More killing so you can have a bigger story?
Most great literature is grounded in violence and tragedy. This situation could yield a book that would rank my name up there with Irving and Twain. It has rangers, vigilantes, gunfights, everything but Indians. I might put in a few of those for extra color.
Andy hadn't read many books. He'd never heard of Irving or Twain.
If I was you, I wouldn't start counting the money just yet.
He didn't see Daggett until he was about to bed down on his wagon yard cot. Daggett was silent as he walked into the little circle of lantern light and stood, his mind on matters far away. Andy waited for him to say something, but Daggett didn't.
Well, did you get Carrie settled in the hotel?
Oh, yeah. And took her to supper. We had us a long talk afterward.
Has she decided what to do?
She has. Me and her together. What would you think about standing up with me in the morning while I get married?
Married? I think you were moving way too fast. Are you sure you've thought this through?
I've thought on it a right smart. Her coming to town just brought things to a head sooner than I'd expected.
Where would you take her? Where would you live? Rangers travel around an awful lot.
You're married.
Well, I don't get much time to spend with my wife.
Well, maybe I've been a ranger long enough. Maybe it's time I find something else to do. I could run a ranch for somebody or open a store in town.
Andy could imagine Daggett on a ranch, but not running a store.
Have you thought about how Harper Teal will take this? You know what he said about you and Carrie and about not setting foot on the Teal Ranch again.
Once we're married, there won't be much he can do.
Except maybe shoot you. He's already had one son-in-law that he hated.
He can't hold a grudge forever.
Well, he's had a grudge against Ethan McIntosh ever since the war. And what about the McIntoshes? They'll figure you've thrown in with the Teals.
I can't help that. It's high time they put their damn fool feud aside.
They've got too much invested in it to quit.
Andy wasn't convinced that Daggett realized what he was getting himself in for.
You told me you were married once. What makes you think it'll work out this time if it didn't before?
Daggett seemed to retreat back in time. His face creased, and his eyes seemed to be looking at something far away.
It would have worked the first time if I hadn't been away too much. There came a day when I was gone, and an outlaw I was hunting for decided to hunt for me. He didn't find me at home, but he found my wife.
Andy guessed the rest from the savage expression on Daggett's face.
What'd you do?
What any man would do. I hunted him down and I killed him.
Daggett looked away.
But that didn't bring her back to life.
Daggett intended to have a private wedding that it not be noised about. He didn't consider the drawing power of his name, however. The minister was a jovial sort who loved a crowd and saw to it that the word spread around town. By 10 o'clock in the morning, more people gathered than his little church would comfortably seat.
Well, I didn't want a spectacle.
The ceremony was mercifully short. Self-consciously, Daggett kissed the bride. The newlyweds hurried out through a side door to escape the crowd. Turning toward the door, Andy saw Rodock. He immediately looked for a firearm.
Oh, don't worry. I'm not carrying.
I respect the solemnity of an occasion such as this.
Surprised to see you here at all.
I like to attend weddings. They remind me not to repeat my most unfortunate mistake. Marriage.
It didn't work out?
My way of life was incompatible with hers. She did me the great favor of running away with a dry goods drummer. I fear that Daggett's in for a longer sentence than mine was, unless I kill him.
Why would you do that?
At the time we had our set too many years ago, I was hired to do a job. It was strictly business, nothing personal. Unfortunately, I underestimated his instincts for self-preservation. Then it became personal.
He thinks you're here on business now.
My business, young friend, is always confidential.
As Rodock walked away, Judge Zachary approached, smoking a black cigar.
Andy, I hope you know that Rodock is a dangerous man. I would give him room if I were you.
How do you come to know him?
As a county judge, it is my business to keep an eye on dangerous men who come into my community. He may stand before my bench one day.
If he and Daggett don't kill each other.
I've been expecting you to drop in for a visit at my ranch some evening. I would like to hear about your years as a captive of the Indians.
I never felt like a captive. I was just one of them. Well,
all the more interesting.
A small group of well-wishers surrounded the newly married couple. A nervous Daggett beckoned Andy with a subtle crooking of a finger.
Would you bring my stuff over from the wagon yard to the hotel? Me and Carrie will stay there a few days till we find something a little more permanent.
Well, there won't be no place permanent as long as you're a ranger. I hope you explain that to her. She's lived in one place all her life.
It'll be a big change for both of us, but we're strong.
Now you don't look like you could whip an old man with a broken arm.
You want to try me, Pickard?
It's too pretty a day for a fight.
His grin faded as he realized that Harper Teal might come to town before the day was over, looking for his daughter. There might indeed be a fight. Andy looked around for Sheriff Seymour, but couldn't see him. The lawman had mentioned the possibility of leaving town for a long hunting trip. Right now, Andy would rather be with him wherever he was than to be waiting here for the unpredictable. The Teals arrived in the middle of the afternoon, Harper flanked by his sons and two cowboys. Andy heard the commotion and walked out into the street to meet them. Harper reined up and faced Andy with narrowed, flinty eyes that could kill cotton at 30 paces.
You know where my daughter's at? I'm here to take her home.
I don't believe she'll want to go.
That's none of your business. She'll do what I tell her to.
Yesterday, maybe. Things are different today.
What do you mean, different?
You'll have to ask her.
I will. Where's she at?
The hotel. She's probably expecting you.
I was.
Harper rode around Andy. His sons and the cowboys followed, but let him ride a couple of lengths ahead. Andy walked alongside Bud's horse.
Your daddy's fixing to get a surprise. I don't know how he'll take it. You better stay close and not let him do something he'll be sorry for.
I don't think he's ever been sorry about anything. Except maybe not shooting Ethan McIntosh back when it was legal to kill a Yankee.
By the time Harper reached the hotel, several bystanders had fallen in behind to watch. One was Jefferson Tolliver, with the eagerness of a man awaiting a show.
Whatever happens, he'll write it up twice as big as it really is.
Harper stopped just short of the hotel steps.
Carrie! I know you're in there. Come on out, you're going home.
Carrie did not answer.
Carolina Teal, you get out of here this minute.
Andy turned to Bud.
With all due respect, your daddy's got the manners of an Arkansas mule.
And the stubbornness.
Carrie appeared in the doorway, a dour Daggett at her side, his arm locked with hers. He was unarmed.
Hello, Pa. You didn't have to arouse the whole town. You could have come in and knocked on my door like a gentleman.
I'm gentleman enough to know that my daughter doesn't belong in a town like this. It's time you went home.
You drove me away yesterday. You said things I never thought I would hear from you.
You sicked the Rangers onto us. I was mad.
So was I. You're still mad, but I'm not.
Harper turned his anger on Daggett.
Ranger, I told you to stay away from my daughter. It appears like you didn't hear me.
You're pretty loud. I heard you.
But here you are with her in a hotel. I got every right to kill you.
You lost any rights you had over her. Carrie and I are married.
Harper's face froze. Slowly and deliberately, he dismounted. Daggett motioned for Carrie to remain where she was, then moved down the steps and faced Harper on the ground.
She's still your daughter, but more than that, she's my wife.
Yee-haw!
Harper brought up a hard fist and drove it into Daggett's chin. Daggett staggered backward, falling on the steps. He arose quickly, his eyes wild and dangerous. He nodded a fist and drew it back.
Why, you?
Somehow Daggett called up enough control to stay his hand.
You're her daddy, so I'll grant you that one. But don't you try a second one.
Bud and Cecil were on the ground immediately, holding their father's arms.
Pa, you don't want to make a show of yourself fighting in the street. Besides, he can whip you.
He'll play hell.
Harper tried to shake loose, but his sons held him firmly.
But Daggett's a good man. It won't be like it was with Skeen.
Don't you mention that name ever again.
You boys better get him home.
Harper quit struggling. He lifted his gaze to Carrie, still up on the porch.
All right, then. You've made your bed. Now lay in it. I don't ever want to see you again.
Carrie stood straight and proud.
Pa, you don't mean that.
I never say what I don't mean.
Her face grim, Carrie folded her arms.
Then so be it.
Come on, boys. Let's go. I don't have a daughter no more. And you ain't got a sister.
Harper climbed into the saddle and reined his mount into the street. Bud hung back to speak to Carrie.
Sorry, sis. Maybe he'll change his mind once he's got past his mad.
How many times did you ever see him change his mind?
Daggett climbed the steps and gently put his arms around her.
Come on back inside. We got a lot to talk about.
They disappeared inside the hotel. Andy watched the Teals ride down the street and out of town. Anger welled up inside of him over Harper's bullheadedness. It gave way after a bit to sorrow for Carrie. He wished he could say something to comfort her, but that was for Daggett to do. He looked up to the hotel's second story. He saw Ethan McIntosh and his wife Agatha watching from a window. They witnessed the whole event. Likely as not, Ethan reveled in it. Tolliver held a stub pencil and scribbled on a pad of paper.
Ain't you being awful nosy?
A newspaper man has a special dispensation to be nosy. The people deserve to know all the news.
Andy had pondered over Judge Zachary's invitation to come out to his place for a visit. Stableman Scanlon told him how to find the Zachary Ranch. The ranch wasn't large by Teal or McIntosh standards. The house was a small and simple frame dwelling with a little gingerbread trim around the front, but little other ornamentation. The judge sat in a rocking chair on the porch. He probably had not been home long.
Ranger Pickard! I'm delighted to see you. Come, have a seat on the porch and join me.
I have some Kentucky bourbon inside if you care to indulge.
I hardly ever drink anything stronger than coffee.
Oh, I can fire up the stove and fix that.
It's too warm for coffee. I just wanted to see this place. Sheriff has been telling me about it. He says you're a lucky man.
Well, I am. This little ranch has been a refuge to me. A real treasure.
Doesn't it get lonely?
Well, for someone else, perhaps, but not for me. No matter how tiresome the day has been, I can sit here and watch my cattle grazing. Evenings, I often see deer venturing out of the thickets to browse. And listen to the birds sing. They are infinitely more pleasing than the idle chatter of so many foolish people.
I don't think they're always singing. They're warning each other to stay away from their territory, just like people.
Well, I like to think they're singing. I've always hated strife.
Being a judge, I guess you've seen a lot of that.
Far too much. There have been some who've said my court has been too strict, longer on punishment than on mercy. But sometimes it is necessary in the interest of law and order. There is right, and there is wrong. The line between them is as stark as a stone wall. But there are still those among us who do not recognize it. That's why I like this place so much. No arguments, no strife. Except perhaps among the birds.
Andy thought of Bethel and how much he wanted to give her a place like this. He mentally calculated how much he had saved in a bank in Austin. Maybe that place was closer than he thought.
How come you never got married?
Well, I answered my country's call and went off to war. By the time I came back, the girl I wanted had married someone else. For a long time, I shied away from likely women. Then one day, I looked in the mirror and an old man looked back at me. I realized I had waited too long. But the bachelor life has its own compensations. Were I married, I would probably have to live in town instead of here, in this place of rest and solitude.
Andy had been wondering about Sheriff Seymour. He hadn't seen him since yesterday. He found Deputy Willis sitting in the sheriff's chair, his feet on the desk, whittling on a stick, letting the shavings litter the floor.
Ha!
Willis seemed startled, then relaxed when he saw that it wasn't the sheriff.
Oh, I thought maybe Pete was back.
Back from where?
A settler south of here reported losing some stock. He couldn't be sure when they were taken. Might have been the McIntoshes, or it might have been the Teals that took them.
It's hard to believe either family was responsible.
I can see how you might not want the Teals involved, now that your partner is a Teal in-law. You're letting your feelings get in the way of your judgment.
Well, I've eaten at both families' tables and slept in their bunkhouses. Have you?
No. Personally, I've never had much use for either side. They're too rich and got too much land. The way I see it, everybody ought to have about the same. Nobody rich and nobody poor.
The world doesn't work that way.
It sure as hell don't. What do you got, Ranger, besides a job and a wage? No more than me, I'll bet. I've shoved a poor man's boots under the supper table as long as I can remember. If things don't change, I'll still be doing it when I'm an old man.
You can't take it out on the Teals and the McIntoshes. They've got their good side, like most people.
Yeah, Billy the Kid must have had a good side, too. I bet he was kind to his horses. Ah.
Willis jerked his right hand away from the stick. His thumb was bleeding.
Damn, I was looking away and cut myself.
He sucked on his thumb and spat the blood at a spittoon, but missed.
Yeah, that's a lesson for both of us. When you're doing a job, don't look away.
The sheriff had not returned by dark. Andy visited the saloons and found people still talking about the confrontation between Daggett and Harper Teal. Their conversations dried up quickly when Andy came within hearing. Editor Tolliver was engaged in a poker game. He had the largest stack of chips on the table and gave Andy a sly smile.
I don't suppose you have seen your partner tonight, Ranger. I suspect he is rather busy with his new duties.
I suppose you intend to write all about it.
No, in regard to certain matters, silence is best. I would not wish to shock elderly ladies or confuse our youngest readers.
Andy fantasized about forcing Tolliver to eat several copies of his newspaper, though he restrained himself from any effort to bring the dream to reality. He read the cards in Tolliver's hand.
Hope you don't expect to bluff your way through with two queens.
He left Tolliver red-faced and trying too late to hide his hand.
Sheriff Seymour limped into town toward noon the next day, dusty, droop-shouldered, and near exhaustion. He stopped at a horse trough and pumped fresh water into his cupped hands to drink. He removed his hat, pumped some more, and doused his head. The water cut trails through the dust on his face. Andy trotted to meet him as Seymour turned back toward the open street.
What's happening to you? Where's your horse?
Seymour seated himself on the edge of the trough.
Got him shot out from under me. Ain't there nobody traveling today? I never met so much as a freight wagon all the way in. I could have used a ride.
Looking tired enough to fall, he pumped and drank some more water.
I was looking for some stolen cattle. Caught up to him south of here. There was four men driving them.
Recognize any?
Nah, I never got close enough to be sure. I was 200, maybe 300 yards away when one of them leveled a rifle at me, killed my horse, pinned my leg under him. I managed to work my saddle gun free and take a shot at him, but I don't know if I hit anybody. I was half the night working my leg out from under my horse.
Any idea whose cattle they were?
I never got close enough to see any brands except for one cow that dropped off and shelled out a baby. She was wearing the Macintosh Bar F, and that made me figure the Teals might have been responsible.
Except that the Teals were in town yesterday.
Damn! I thought I had it all figured out.
I'll bet you're hungry. It's just a few steps over to the chili joint.
Ain't eaten since breakfast yesterday. Pox on them boys.
You say you don't know who they were?
Well, not for certain. Two of them took off a running. The two who hung back and shot at me could have been Harold Percy and Sonny Vernon. Like I say, my eyes are none too good anymore.
While the sheriff put away two eggs and a slab of steak, Andy told him of the events he had missed. Seymour listened intently to the account of the wedding and the confrontation with Harper Teal.
If I was Daggett, I'd ask Ranger Headquarters to give you a different assignment away from here. When Harper Teal gets really mad, he loses all sense of judgment. He could have shot Daggett. For that matter, he might have shot his own daughter.
Yeah, you wouldn't do anything that crazy.
Well, he's capable. They say in the war he killed two Yankee cannon crews, turned the cannons around and fired them at the Bluecoats. They say he got shot twice but was too stubborn to bleed.
Andy had long since learned to take war stories with a grain of salt.
So you got no idea who was stealing the cattle?
Well, if it wasn't the Teals, I haven't gotten the slightest notion. I'd almost swear that Vincent Skeen had come back to life if I hadn't seen him laying dead in his cell.
Maybe it's Skeen's ghost. Come back to bedevil you for letting a mob kill him in your jail.
A ghost?
Well, Indians believe in them. Who can say for sure that they're wrong? The Comanches were afraid of dead men's spirits. They thought they came back to do mischief.
Well, I don't believe in anything I can't see, and I've never seen a ghost.
You never seen the wind, but you felt it. You know it's real.
All right, you look for a ghost. I'll look for a live human being with no compunctions about other people's property.
I don't really believe in ghosts either, but I lived with the Indians long enough to know there are things out there that we can't see or understand. Maybe one of Skeen's accomplices is taking up his idea.
Well, that makes more sense than some ghost spirit.
But you can't see an idea either.
You stayed with the Indians too long.
Andy had dropped off to sleep on a cot under the wagon yard's hay shed when someone shook his shoulder. He came awake, reaching for the pistol beneath his blanket.
Ranger, come with me.
Andy could see only a vague shape in the darkness.
Who are you?
You know me. Come on, we need you.
In the middle of the night?
It ain't my choice either. I'll saddle your horse for you while you get dressed.
I'm dressed now, except for my boots. And I'll saddle my own horse. Where are we going?
To the doctor's house first. He won't come with me unless you do. Sonny Vernon needs him real bad.
Andy remembered them. The hapless pair jumped on Lanny Teal while he was fighting with Jake McIntosh. The two had impressed Andy as potential candidates for the penitentiary.
What happened to Sonny?
I'll tell you about it while we travel. There's too many ears around here and everybody don't need to know.
They rode side by side to the doctor's house. The doctor just finished harnessing a horse to his buggy.
Thanks for coming, Ranger. I couldn't get this young man to tell me much, and I had no intention of leaving town with him unless I had the strong arm of the law by my side.
I don't think either one of us ought to go anywhere till he tells us what this is all about.
Son is wounded. I thought he'd get better, but he's worse. I'm afraid he's fixing to die without he gets some proper doctoring.
How'd he come to get wounded?
We was driving cattle when somebody came chasing up from behind us like he meant business.
Who?
We didn't go back and ask him. There was a little shooting and Sonny got hit. I snuck him away so nobody would see he was hurt. I didn't want the regulators coming after him.
Why should they?
Truth is, me and Sonny been riding with them some. They're hell on secrecy. You know what they done to Callender and Bigelow. They'd do the same to Sonny and me. I decided the best thing was to leave the country with him. But we didn't get very far.
How far?
To that sheep outfit of old man Hawkins's. Him and his wife, they done what they could for Sonny, but it's not enough.
Andy suspected that Percy had been with the night riders who struck the Hawkins's place some nights earlier.
Are you sure you know the way in the dark?
Percy was not sharp enough to catch the irony.
Sure, I've been there before.
Which one of you killed the sheriff's horse?
The sheriff? Is that who was after us?
It was.
I didn't want to have no killing hanging over me, so I shot at his horse. We thought he might keep after us afoot, but he didn't.
The horse pinned him down. When he got free, he had to walk all the way back to town.
I'll bet he's mad at us.
He is, except he doesn't know who you are. Yet.
He'll figure it out, and the regulators will too. Me and Sonny took those cattle for our own selves without asking anybody. The regulators warned us against going out on our own.
They reached the Hawkins' place at daybreak, the doctor following close in his buggy. Hawkins held the door open until the doctor and Andy entered the house.
The boy's in here, doctor. The bullet's too deep for us to get at it. Maybe you can do better.
Sonny was unconscious. Without even feeling his forehead, Andy knew he was running a high fever. Andy looked to Hawkins.
They put you at risk by coming here. The regulators may be afraid they've told you too much.
They haven't told me a thing. I've always tried to keep to myself and avoid being entangled in any of the troubles around here. But they have landed on my doorstep nonetheless. As a Christian, I could not turn these boys away. Who knows? I may be entertaining an angel unaware.
The doctor probed Sonny's shoulder.
How soon do you think Sonny will be able to travel?
Travel? Are you trying to kill him?
I'm trying to keep somebody else from doing it. If they get the idea we might talk too much, they'll squash us like bugs. They never liked us much in the first place. They just tolerated us so they could use us.
I don't see where you owe them anything. Tell me who they are. Me and Dag will take care of them.
I don't know all of them. Even if I told you about the ones I know, there'd be others. I wouldn't stand a snowball's chance in hell. For all I know, the doctor here could be one of them.
If I were, that boy would already be dead.
If you won't tell us who they are, maybe you can at least tell us who they aren't. Were any of the McIntoshes in on that raid at the Teal Ranch?
No, they had nothing to do with it. But Jake McIntosh is a friend of ours. We thought he'd like it if we got a shot at Lanny Teal.
You did that for Jake?
Well, that's what friends are for. Only we never saw Lanny. Never saw anybody, really. It was too dark.
The Teals naturally thought the McIntoshes had raided them, so they rode over to pay them back. You could have gotten Jake and some others killed.
Never thought of it like that.
The doctor finished bandaging Sonny's wound, then sat back and stared at the unconscious young man. Sooner or later, someone will start looking for these two. The longer they stay here, the more they jeopardize Mr. Hawkins and his wife. The doctor in me says this boy shouldn't be moved. The realist in me says he ought to be taken away from here as soon as possible.
It's plain that he can't leave on horseback. Mr. Hawkins, could you let me have the barry of your wagon?
Certainly. Where do you intend to take him?
Andy thought it best to keep that information to himself.
You're better off not knowing. When you get to town, will you tell Logan Daggett that I've taken two material witnesses to a safe place? I'll be back in a few days.
I'll do that.
Don't tell anybody but him. Nobody.
Sonny came around during the day, and though it was a rough ride in the wagon, he seemed on the mend by the time they camped that night. Andy made stew from a piece of mutton Mrs. Hawkins put in the wagon. He took it as a favorable sign that Sonny ate all Percy gave him. Even so, Sonny was still confused. He didn't understand the reason for their flight.
Remember what happened to Callender and Bigelow? It could happen to us. Them fellas are awful afraid somebody will tell their secrets.
Sonny looked at Andy with frightened eyes.
You won't let them get us, will you, Ranger?
No, I won't, but you owe me.
We ain't got any money.
It's not money I'm after. It's information. Names.
Sonny glanced at Percy.
We can't do that. They kill us.
If you knew how dangerous they are, how come you two ride with them in the first place?
We never had nothing, me and Sonny. Stuck in our craw seeing other people have so much and us with nothing. We was told that if we took enough cattle from the Teals and the McIntoshes, we could end up with a piece of their land.
I thought the McIntoshes were your friends.
Jake is. He treats us like we're somebody. We never cared for the old man, though.
Nothing we ever done suited that old fart. Anyway, friendship ends when there's money on the table.
Me and Sonny figured to go partners when we got some land of our own.
If you got any land. Don't you know they would squeeze you out? When you pitch a piece of meat into a bunch of dogs, the strongest will grab it all.
Never thought of it that way.
Andy doubted that they'd thought much at all. By noon of the third day out, they crested a rise, and Percy almost jumped from the wagon when he saw the ranger camp just ahead. He whirled around on the seat, his eyes wild.
What's this? What have you brought us to?
Andy dropped his hand to the butt of his pistol to discourage Percy from doing something foolish.
Promise I'd bring you to a safe place. Doubt there's a safer place anywhere than a ranger camp.
We're under arrest?
You've been under arrest ever since the Hawkins' place.
I've heard what the rangers do to people.
Only the people that misbehave. You ain't going to misbehave, are you, Percy?
Percy lowered his head, but didn't answer.
You don't like it here? There's an easy way for you and Sonny to go free. Just give me the names I'm looking for.
You know I can't do that.
You will when you get tired enough of this place. Hope you enjoy the hard labor.
He accompanied the wagon to the sergeant's tent. Sergeant Riker stepped out and surveyed the prisoners.
Have you and Daggett already taken care of the trouble back yonder? I'm afraid not, but these two have had a hand in it. I hope I can leave them here for safekeeping. One is going to need a doctor's attention.
The sergeant nodded, looking at Percy.
We can use a swamper to do the heavy lifting around camp. We just sent the last one off to the pen.
While a couple of rangers took Percy and Sonny in hand, Andy explained briefly to the sergeant what had happened.
These two boys are little fish in a lake that's too big for them. I think we can make life miserable enough that they'll be glad to give us chapter and verse. Seen your wife? Not yet. I thought I'd drop by and say howdy.
The sun was still high in the west.
Your horses look tired out after the trip. Why don't you give them a day's rest before you start back?
Andy had intended to do that anyway, but this made it official.
Sergeant, heaven must have a special place prepared just for you.
After Andy hugged Bethel hard enough to squeeze the breath from her lungs, she stood off at arm's length and studied him critically.
No bullet holes anywhere this time?
Disappointed.
Can I take your word for it?
You can check for yourself.
He didn't tell her about being clubbed unconscious when the regulators killed Bigelow. That left only a small scar hidden by his hair. It hurt only when he put his hat on or took it off. She made breakfast the second morning, but ate little of it herself. Staying within reaching distance of him, she accompanied him outside.
I suppose it would break a dozen ranger rules if I went with you.
At least that many.
He had lingered with her until his conscience troubled him. This was not what the state was paying him for. He hugged her fiercely and kissed her before climbing into the wagon.
I'll see you as soon as I can.
The team made a quick start. Andy looked back to be sure his saddle horse was still tied on behind. He saw Bethel standing with her hands clasped in front of her. She went into the house just as the trail made a bend and he lost sight of her. He kept seeing her in his mind's eye for a long time. Someday. On the road back, he had time to think about the situation to which he was returning, to do some guessing about who might be involved in the trouble. He eliminated first one, then another from his list of possibles, then reconsidered and reinstated them as suspects. Of only one thing was he nearly certain, that someone was trying to steal enough cattle from the Teals and McIntoshes to leave them in financial straits. They were also trying to manipulate the two families into a crippling fight that would leave them vulnerable to the free-range advocates. Toward dusk, he found a creek and decided to camp. He unhitched the team, staking them and his saddle horse where the grass looked greenest, then started a small fire. He lifted out the sack of groceries Bethel had given him and waited for the fire to burn down to smoldering coals. He saw the horses lift their heads and look back in the direction from which they'd come. Turning, he saw a woman riding side saddle. He recognized her on sight. Bethel reined up.
What's for supper?
What the hell are you doing here?
Ugh. She dismounted without help and removed her saddle. Oof.
A woman's place is with her husband.
Not this woman. Not this husband. Not where I'm going.
I don't suppose you have another stake rope.
No, but I got a pair of hobbles. I ought to have put them on you this morning.
She led her horse to the creek and let it drink its fill. Daylight brought Andy awake, momentarily disoriented to find Bethel lying close beside him. He listened to birds announcing the dawn, and a cow somewhere calling for a wayward calf. Gently, he nudged Bethel.
Come get up, Bethel. We'll have some breakfast, then I'll get you started on the road back to McCavitt.
Andy found Hawkins and his dog coaxing the last sheep into the corral. Andy shut the gate behind the sheep.
A little later than I figured in getting the wagon back to you. Got delayed some.
He explained about Bethel.
My late wife was like that. She listened politely to everything I told her, then went ahead and did what she pleased.
Anything happened while I've been gone?
Well, a couple men came by here yesterday and inquired about those two young fellows you carried away.
What did you tell them?
I told them I hadn't seen anyone answering the descriptions they gave.
Did you recognize them?
By face. One is named Granger. If I were given to speculation, I would hazard that they were associated with your prisoners in some sort of mischief.
I guess they were worried about what the boys might tell us.
Did they tell you anything?
Sergeant Riker is a persuasive man. Percy told what he knew. It wasn't much.
I've heard of some Ranger methods that go beyond the pale.
The sergeant didn't hurt them. He just scared them to death.
Your friend Daggett strikes me as someone who would do more than that.
He might. It doesn't take much to touch him off. That's why I didn't send for him to help me with Percy and Vernon.
At breakfast, Hawkins announced he'd accompany Andy to town. Hawkins stopped the wagon in front of Babcock's store. Andy shook his hand and thanked him for the several days' use of the wagon. Hawkins dismissed the gratitude with a wave of his big hand.
Who knows? I may make a sheepman out of you yet.
Rubbing his hands on an apron, the storekeeper stepped out onto the porch to greet Hawkins.
I've been gone for several days. Any excitement?
Babcock shook his head.
Not since that set-to between Harper Teal and Ranger Daggett. The town has been so quiet that someone claimed to have seen a mountain lion sleeping in the street. I put little stock in that, of course.
Andy knew the story. The same yarn was being told about Fort Worth.
Have you seen Daggett around?
He's out in town somewhere. He never comes into the store except to buy some tobacco.
Andy turned, intending to take his horse to the wagon yard and turn it loose. He almost bumped into Daggett. He looked for welcome in the ranger's eyes, but saw none.
You should have reported to me as soon as you got to town.
I just now got here. Had some delay on the trip.
He explained about Bethel.
Yeah, well, a man ought to keep a tight rein on his wife. It's his place to set the rules and hers to follow.
I'm sure Carrie takes the bit without complaint.
I never quite understood where you went. The doctor just told me you were taking two prisoners to a safe place.
Andy told him about escorting Sonny and Percy to the ranger camp.
Sergeant Riker put the fear of God into Percy. He spilled all he knew.
Good. Now we're getting somewhere.
Not far enough. The trouble is, he just belonged to a little bunch of cow thieves who took orders from the regulators. They dealt with go-betweens, a couple fellas named Burns and Granger. They never let him get close to anybody higher up.
I've heard the name Ed Granger, but I can't tie a face to it.
If we take out Burns and Granger, that'll bust up the theft ring. But it doesn't help us deal with the regulators.
One job at a time.
As Logan walked back to his new wife, Andy was not sure he'd done the right thing sending Bethel home. He missed her, especially when he saw Daggett and Carrie together. Daggett and Carrie took their meals in the hotel's dining room. Andy ate in Kennison's chili joint down the street, where the food was cheaper and just as filling, even if not so fancy. Eating in a hotel was a quick way to shrink a wallet. Finished with his meal, Andy walked back to the hotel and waited for Daggett. The big ranger had not told Andy his plans, and Andy hadn't asked. He knew how badly Daggett disliked answering questions. Their first stop was the sheriff's office. Seymour and his deputy were both there, the sheriff taking his after-lunch nap, Deputy Willis looking at pictures in the Police Gazette.
Upon hearing the ranger's approach, the sheriff opened one eye, then the other.
Andy, we were thinking about sending a search party out for you.
Daggett cut straight to the guts of the matter.
Do you know where we might find Miley Burns and Ed Granger?
Seymour rubbed sleep from his eyes and put on his thick-lensed glasses.
They stay out with the owls and coyotes. Hardly ever see them in town. What do you want them for?
Pickard brought back information that they're a little careless with other people's cattle.
Granger has a squatter's shack back in the hills. He has a brother here in town. Works as a clerk at the hotel.
Oh, yeah, him. I didn't connect the name. He sure don't look like a cattle rustler. He looks like a clerk.
I don't think him and his brother see much of each other.
I found out who shot the horse from under you. Like you guessed, it was Percy and Vernon.
The sheriff pulled out his shirt tail and rubbed his glasses on it.
Yeah, I suspicioned that, but I wasn't close enough to see for sure.
You may not have known it, but you shot Sonny in the shoulder.
With these poor eyes of mine, it had to be the devil's own luck. Where are those boys now?
In a safe place. It was them. Percy, anyway. He told me about Burns and Granger. They was so afraid they'd come after him to shut him up, or the regulators would.
What do you know about the regulators?
I'd better not say, not till me and Daggett have a chance to check on all of it.
Though Percy didn't know much to tell, it might be useful to let the impression spread that he had indeed given Andy some useful information. The sheriff's face settled into a deep frown.
In the beginning, we needed the regulators. Things had gotten out of control. I looked away because they were doing work that the law wouldn't let me do. They hung some bad men, and they ran some others out of the country when I didn't have any legal basis to do it myself. Even horsewhipped a few wife-beaters and whiskey-soaks who wouldn't support their families.
I've seen it happen in other places. After a while, people went to using the vigilantes for their own purposes. They accused innocent men they wanted to get rid of. Then they began taking whatever they wanted because folks were afraid to fight back or even say anything.
That's about the way it played out.
Up at Gainesville early in the war, mob came together, supposed to be good Confederates. They got to accusing first one man, then another, of having Union sympathies. Now, some did, I suppose, but others just had something somebody wanted bad enough to bear false witness. They wound up with a mass hanging that folks up there are still ashamed to talk about.
It was a time I could have stopped it, but I didn't want to. Now I wouldn't even know where to start.
He took a whiskey bottle from a desk drawer and silently offered it to the rangers. They declined.
You want me to go with you after Burns and Granger?
We can handle it. It's better you stay here in case the Teals and the McIntoshes all come to town at one time.
You're a Teal in-law. Can't you keep that from happening?
You know what Harper Teal said to me. I don't have any more say in that family than...
A tall man stepped through the office door.
Than that newspaper man coming yonder.
Jefferson T. Tolliver was dressed in a white suit that contrasted with the black ink stains on his fingers. His confident stride carried him up to the officers.
I'm preparing to go to press with this week's edition. I wonder if you gentlemen have anything of interest to tell my readers.
Andy wouldn't have told Tolliver what time it was, but Daggett seemed of a different mind.
We're going out to try and find two men. We got it on good authority that they're cow thieves.
On what authority, may I ask?
A couple of other thieves. Takes one to know one.
The two rangers set out for the wagon yard. Daggett stopped and pointed down the street.
You trot to the wagon yard and get our horses. I'm going over to the hotel and accidentally let the word slip that we're going after Burns and Granger. I'm betting that all we'll have to do then is follow that clerk.
Andy saw the logic.
You've got the mind of a Comanche.
I take that as a compliment.
The wait was not a long one. The hotel clerk, wearing his suit, left through the back door and trotted toward the wagon yard. Shortly, the clerk left the wagon yard through a back gate, spurring a dun horse into a brisk trot.
We don't want to spook him. Let him get a long head start. If we lose sight of him, we can follow his tracks.
You might. I wouldn't want to bet on me doing it.
Maybe you need to go back and live with the Indians for a while. You didn't finish your education.